Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, WNYC.org. It's 2 days after Crimeans voted overwhelmingly to rejoin Russia, 1 day after Crimean leaders signed a treaty with Moscow, and 1 day before the Russian parliament is set to ratify that treaty and make the annexation official. But today, right now, there's news breaking from the Crimean city of Sevastopol, the port city, and the home of the Russian naval fleet. That's where BuzzFeed's Max Sedin is. He's been reporting on the Ukrainian crisis for months, first from Kiev and now from Crimea. Hi, Max. Hello from New York, and welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So the reports I've been reading on the wire this morning are that Russia has seized the Ukrainian naval headquarters in Sevastopol, with the Russian flag now flying overhead. And just to be clear, we hear that Crimea is home to the Russian Navy. But is this a Ukrainian headquarters?
Yes, this is the head of the Ukrainian naval fleet. Crimea, which was historically part of Russia, has also been home in Sevastopol to the Russian Black Sea Fleet, which bases there next to the Ukrainian fleet under an agreement.
Who seized what building?
What happened was that overnight, first, some Russian troops showed up outside the they showed up outside the headquarters, and then they were soon joined by what are called local self-defense forces, who are irregular guys who have many of these mandates that they're supposed to be analogous to these self-defense people from Maidan, Independence Square in Kiev, from the protests there. And then in the morning, several hundred of them, backed up by the troops, they used an ambulance to break through the gate. They ran in shouting and screaming, breaking down doors, throwing stun grenades, and demanding that the about 400 or so Ukrainian soldiers inside surrender. They gave them three options. One was just abandon the Ukrainian army and go over to the Russian side and become Russian troops. Number two was just leave and go home and be allowed to live in Crimea, but give up their Ukrainian service. And number three was continue serving in the Ukrainian army, but going to Ukraine to do that. And as far as Russia is concerned, even though Parliament hasn't finished ratifying the treaties yet with Crimea, they are retroactive. So Crimea, as far as Russia thinks, is Russian at this very moment.
So have those 300 Ukrainians made any of those choices, or are they resisting?
Most of them just left. There was a confrontation. They were given by their commanders last night the right to use weapons to defend themselves, which they had not done in the previous 2 weeks. Many people thought that when the Russian troops swarmed across the peninsula at the end of February, beginning of March, and started confronting Ukrainian troops in their bases, it's going to lead to conflict. But the Ukrainians refused to fight in any way, which is what many people credit with helping there not be a lot of victims. And the Ukrainian troops are heavily outnumbered in the base in Sevastopol today, and they decided not to do that. One of them, who I spoke to, said, why, what was the point? He actually went over to the Russian side, but most of them, they simply walked out and hadn't decided what to do. They're from Sevastopol, most of them, but they have taken an oath to serve Ukraine, and they don't feel like they can break that oath, and so they just walked out, mostly one by one, carrying their uniforms on coat hangers and carrying their belongings in plastic bags, and with their families waiting for them. A few of them are still barricaded inside, as far as I know.
A few of them are barricaded inside, and so I guess
not very many.
They might become a big international issue if this goes on for a while and they really hold out in some way. The rest of them seem to be just accepting the new reality.
Yes, well, it's very simple. When, you know, regardless of what Ukraine and what the international community thinks about the legality of Crimea's succession and then joining Russia, the fact is that Crimea is very much under Russia's control. This has been de facto the case since the end of February when the Russian troops swarmed across the island. And there's really no point pretending anymore. This seems to be something that the government in Kiev still hasn't really quite woken up to. I think they hope that maybe the troops might put on more of a stand than they have. And they also, if you speak to Ukrainian soldiers and sailors, both ones I spoke to today, but also for the last 2 weeks across Crimea, they have been worried by the fact that no one from Kiev is really giving them any concrete orders. And this has made them feel very demoralized. They feel that the authorities in Kiev don't want to take responsibility for issuing some kind of big specific order in case it goes horribly wrong. And they feel like they've just been cast adrift while they're surrounded by a force that they have absolutely no hope of fighting back against.
Would be nice if the government that they're serving in a military capacity gave them some guidance in this personally threatening situation. I noticed that you tweeted that the Russian troops who staged this raid are not wearing insignia. Why is that, and why is that important?
Well, the importance of this has been the case since they first appeared on the island, is that Russia does have the right under the treaty with Ukraine to have up to 25,000 troops on Crimea, but they did not have the right to use them in the way that they were when they effectively annexed the peninsula at the end of February and seized all the key infrastructure points. And this is a big part of how Russia under Vladimir Putin sees international law, because everyone knows that these guys were Russian troops. Russia was saying that they were local self-defense forces who had just suddenly appeared and acquired all this high-tech military equipment, which is ludicrous on the face of it. But it provides just that little fig leaf to give them that kind of cover legally. And even though they're doing this so that they can flout the law, and they've only the intention of flouting the law, that is part of the big game with the West, with international law, that Putin has been playing over Crimea. You see it in his attitude towards the referendum, where he said, in many ways has been, as he describes it, Russia's revenge for the Kosovo referendum that Russia opposed. And even though yesterday, he effectively admitted that they were Russian troops. They still aren't wearing the insignia, even though today I saw several Russian naval officers show up with insignia and give these guys orders. And it's a farce, it's a charade, but that's because Putin thinks that's what the West has done to international law ever since he's been in power, with Afghanistan, with Iraq, with Libya, with Kosovo. And he made it very clear in his speech yesterday in the Kremlin that he's not going to put up with it anymore.
So just one other thing before you go, because the last time you were on this show, some of our listeners may remember, you were reporting from Kiev, covering the student protests in the square against the pro-Russia existing Yanukovych government at that time, which they did succeed in bringing down. And I wonder what those original protesters make of all of this. Has their original vision gotten lost in this tussle over Crimea?
I think it's very difficult to say. It's very difficult to speak of the protesters as one solid unit. And they are very unhappy. Yesterday, they brought tires out in front of a lot of government buildings yesterday evening, and they set them on fire. That was in response to the first death that there's been in this strange theatrical conflict in Crimea, when a Ukrainian soldier was shot. The Ukrainians are saying that it was a Russian sniper. The Russians are saying that he was someone from the far right militant group that Russia is worried about, that was quite prominent in the protests, which is called Right Sector. And Russia has been trying to imply that these militants have the government in Kiev under their thumb, and that they were the ones who were behind the snipers who killed over 100 people just before Viktor Yanukovych fled in late February, and that they are trying to do this now to discredit the bloodless Russian military operation that the Russians aren't doing in Crimea. If anything, though, this has been a real gift to the government, because the government does not have support of the protesters really in any way. There are lots of token figures from the protest movement who are in the government as a concession to that. And really, behind the scenes, everything is being run by Yulia Tymoshenko, the former prime minister, who got out of jail immediately after the revolution happened. And the people in the government very much are her people. And she is really not liked on Maidan, on Independence Square in Kiev, at all.
Because?
because she is seen as part of the problem, that it wasn't just that you had these corrupt, ostensibly pro-Russian politicians running the show. The reason that Viktor Yanukovych became president when he defeated her in 2010 was because she was seen as this corrupt pro-Western politician who was the other side of the same coin. And the whole point of the protests, what they eventually became, it wasn't just this rejection of Yanukovych's government. It is a wholesale rejection of the entire Ukrainian political system, where you have one party's in power, they steal everything, and they're terrible, and no one's life gets any better than the East party gets voted out, and the West party comes in, and the same thing happens, and you get locked into this endless, depressing cycle that Ukrainian politics has been stuck in for the last 20 years. And the point of the protest movement in Kyiv was to say no more. In that case, domestically, it's almost been a gift for the Ukrainian government to have this, because the only person who could unite Ukraine and get someone behind, and get people behind the government, was Vladimir Putin by coming in as this eternal enemy. And already it's sparked all these ridiculous conspiracy theories. The former president of Ukraine before Yanukovych, Viktor Yushchenko, who was president when Tymoshenko was prime minister, that they spent the entire time feuding. He even said recently that he thinks that Tymoshenko cut some sort of backdoor deal with Putin, where she would give him Crimea and he would help her get back to power. And for the protesters, the issue is not even so much what happens with Crimea. It's, are they going to be able in the weeks and months and even years ahead to be able to have the kind of control over the government that they want, where there's real accountability, where there's a real wholesale change, where you really see new people in power, and you see a new way of doing business in Ukraine.
So be careful what you protest for, or at least try to take into account the unforeseen consequences that might occur. And we leave it there with BuzzFeed's Max Sedin reporting from Sevastopol, Crimea. Thank you very much.